Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm with SLB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.thetalkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. And of course, we also have a Twitch live stream that happens every single week. We had a wonderful communication with them this week. Obviously, this is a post news portion recording. It was nice to be there. The Twitch channel is SFU On Call. That's SFUONCALL. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is also sfuoncall, with my personal account being Paul Franz. It's PaulFranz. Just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. It's PaulFranz. You'll find me there. And, of course, I have a business account called Franz Games, which is for Franz Games itself. Of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned into a podcast available on various other feeds around the net. Of course, we have the recording on Twitch. And, of course, I have a channel on YouTube, which I also post up the videos that I do recording. And, obviously, if you have any comments, please email me. And I know the YouTube people, they're more than happy to comment on my on things. And quick news from this week, release on the Shapeways for the September Shapeways release of minis. There are 43 new items, including Federation Klingon, Lyran, and LDR war dreadnoughts, Federation old survey cruiser, Tholian battleship carrier and battleship, Saturnian light carrier, Saturnian light carrier, PF tender light carrier group, and strike carrier, and Orion heavy battle cruiser. Matrians, strike carrier, and command cruiser, and also that includes a sprue of Dirk fighters. Steve Cole was busy on a Call to Arms Starfleet Book 2.0, and so was Gene. She was busy editing that same book and also, of course, managing Facebook and uploading the ships to Shapeways so you can look at them and buy them. And Steve Petrick, of course, was working on the SFB updates and also the Tholian Master Starship book. Moving on to the SFB Online Tournament, the Sapphire Star Tournament number 1 was completed, and Peter Bakia in the Gorn defeated Lee Graves in the ISC. Peter outguessed Lee on turn number 3. He guessed that Lee would sit and spin, and he guessed correctly, as I mentioned. Lee did. Stop. Then Peter tracked Lee's ship and unloaded a full spread of plasma to inflict 126 points of damage, and it was over, except for, of course, the crying. Moving on to the Starfleet Warlord. I was busy this past week working on the different little utilities for automating Starfleet Warlord, so then it can then be more of an automated service, which people can upload their orders or do them completely online, and then have it so that it just processes them and then sends them out. That is the goal of Starfleet Warlord and what I want to do in the future when it comes to that. It might be something as simple as I just mentioned, uploading them, so that we can do this completely without me, and it can be done faster. Of course, it's going to require that everyone use the aid or use possibly a web-based aid itself, which will allow them to do everything without actually downloading a program. But that's step 2 in my mind at this point. Some quick update on the library. Unfortunately, Frank was busy doing other things, so that there was no newly completed conversions for this week. which is 2000, still stuck at 2,519, yet to be converted to 811, and percent complete is still just 75.65. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only Paul Franz, welcome you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me, we've got Barry, we have Dave, who says I'm offline. But I think that's because he thought I was offline on Twitch, and I just started to record, because I don't want to start the stream until on Twitch until I'm ready to start. And I am ready to start. So, how you doing?
Okay. Sorry, I missed last week. I was
That's fine.
Working long hours.
Oh, understood.
Yeah. And I don't think we set a topic after the Drex.
No, we did not.
Week. Okay. So what was last week's topic?
Sorry. Jeez. Last week's topic, I think, with you and me, it was the Drex. Was it Drex?
Was that last week? No, that was week before, I thought.
Oh, okay. You weren't here last week. Okay.
Maybe.
Which meant that was Merchants of the Federation.
Oh, right. The game you were playtesting at Gamers.
Right. I was reviewing it for people and telling them the things that I found wrong with it. Also telling them about the things that I liked about it. And also things not to do when it comes to playtest. You know, and doing those kind of things. So that's the state of release is interesting. So,
yeah.
So that makes things, actually, that makes things kind of difficult for us since you didn't give me an Omega race to freshen my rules knowledge up on, and so I have no clue. Obviously,
we'll skip that this week, but I'll give you one for next.
Okay.
Have we done Warb yet?
No, we definitely have not done Warb.
Or actually, I think we did discuss it, but I don't remember. It was it your house, or was it over talk ship?
I don't remember, but I know it wasn't the main topic for the evening either, in either case. Because I know we did do quite a bit of discussing when you were here.
Right. Okay. Yeah, well, we could do. Actually, there is one that I'd like to try. Is L'Oreal.
Okay. The fairies.
Yeah, that one was.
Right?
Yeah, the fairies. They weren't bad. Yeah, let's do the L'Oreal. They actually balanced pretty well, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. Aren't the fairies the ones with the fire shields and...
Fire shields were kind of interesting.
Oh, agreed. They're kind of interesting, especially with the way they bounce the damage off themselves.
Right. Right. It's like, you can hit me, but it's going to hit you back.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So what shall we talk about tonight, my dear friend?
Well, I just purchased, it just came out today, was the expansion for Through the Ages.
Oh, cool.
It came out with, and I was just, I literally got it about a half hour ago.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, because it just came out today. But it added a whole bunch of new leaders, a whole bunch of new wonders, and some new tactics.
Oh, okay.
So I was just starting to dig. Yeah.
It took me a moment there because I remember, because normally when we talk about tactics as something that we come up with to use in the game while actually in Through the Ages, they're actually cards called tactics.
Right, right.
Right. That took me a moment. So, I totally forgot.
Right. And they rebalance some of the other cards, the older cards.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, when you buy the expansion, apparently you can use the base rules. You can use the base rules rebalance stuff. You can then use the new rules or the new leaders and wonders, or you can have it randomly pick. I guess it's the same number, because when they added leaders, you can't just dilute the deck because that lengthens the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to basically say, okay, for every new leader that gets shuffled in, you got to shuffle out an old leader. So it's kind of like a random mixture of them.
Yeah, so basically you still have the same level of leaders for each age.
Right, same number.
Age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And same number of wonders, et cetera.
Right, because you don't want to give people too many opportunities for leaders.
Now, I don't know what it does with the tactics. If it just says, you get more tactics, or does it shuffle them into, I don't know yet.
Right. That's the thing with tactics. Is that if you have too many tactics, it dilutes the deck when it comes to events and
colonies and
right. That's the colonies, yeah.
All the other stuff,
right? Because
yeah.
It's just like just, you got to think about deck building. It's just the same kind of concept where,
right?
If you add one thing, it kind of dilutes the deck for other things. So,
yeah. Unless you substitute things out while you added.
Right. Well, remove things. Yeah.
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 So, then it was, I guess, did you learn any new games at Gamers this year?
Nope. I mainly focused on Merchants of the Federation, and I played that one game of Through the Ages with you guys, and that's all I did. Only game that I learned about was EVE Online. Which is an interesting game. The one thing, actually, I got to talk to Doug about EVE Online. EVE Online is really a cool game. Obviously, people have been playing it for ages, and I do mean ages, because this company, the company who built it, is like I don't know how many years old, and they actually got acquired by another company.
What is it? Because I've heard the name, but I've never played it.
EVE Online?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't know what the company name?
I've heard the name of the game,
right.
But I've known nothing about it.
Okay. Yikes. So much about it. Basically the premise is that you're basically a clone, which are the kind of connected in with a ship, and you live in this, and in the ship you're a pod that contains your body inside. So and then that pod connects, and your body connects up with the ship, and you can you can learn all kinds of skills and so forth. You can level up the different skills and be a better captain, or a better navigator, or a better fighter, or a better miner. Things like that, both in skills of yourself, but also you can upgrade your ship. You can actually have multiple ships, which you switch, which ship you're actually flying at that moment in time. Now, this takes a while, and you have different kinds of sectors. You've got what's called null sec system,
Mm-hmm.
Which null sec means zero, no security whatsoever. Wild, you know, wild, wild west kind of thing. The strong will survive. You know, there's a, one sect which is still, you know, you got, it's a little higher, you know, it's a little safer. And then, of course, there's full sec. Full sec means basically if you kill somebody and you're not allowed to kill that person, the police will come in and kill you.
Okay, okay.
You know, you have to be to be able to be killable. You have to be yellow or red. Yellow is a suspect. Red is actually yellow. You can't be killed in a full sec. You can be killed in a one sec. If you're, yeah, but you know what, yeah. So, but you know, in one sec. The police will still come and nab your ass if the person you killed was like green, but there's a delay in the police showing up and killing you. And then, you know, cause, and if you die, your ship basically gets blown up, and then your a lot of your stuff just stays there. But sometimes, you know, in some cases it gets thrown all over the universe. And there's all kinds of systems. You have to travel from system to system using warp gates. So it's one of those things that it takes. It's one of those games that's going to take a lot of time online.
Ah, okay.
Now the one thing that I want to talk to Doug about, which I'm pretty sure I understand this, which is basically, you don't have full control of your ship. You can tell it to go here, to go there, to keep range over this one target. But you can't say, oh, you know, you can't fully control it where you can, okay, you can turn left, turn right, you know, immediately. You can do some of that, but it's not like a, you know, it's not like Starfleet Battles where you tell it to turn left or turn right.
So you can't set a course, but you could say, hey, I need to go there.
Right.
It's like, hey, I've got a plane ticket. I'm getting on the plane to go to Paris, but you're not telling the plane what route to take.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you get into a fight, you don't really, you know, have full control of your ship. You have these automated systems that you have set up, which will do most of the actual quote unquote fighting and defending. And so, but you still fire. This, you know, tell it to fire and just keeps on firing on that target that you specified. Until it's dead,
or it's defeated you,
right? Or you're dead.
Yeah,
one of those two. So that's it. It's interesting. Right. I've gone through the tutorials, and Doug said go to this one system to you're walking, aren't you? Anyway, he told me to go to this one system to get the proper person to guide me, you know, to select my my what I want to be. Do you want to be a miner or a security person or whatever? You know, you have to go through these agents. And he said, you know, go to this one system to connect up with your a good agent, basically. It's like, okay, well, I actually went, the game told me to go to this one place, so I went to that one place. So I'm going to, next time I log in, I'm going to switch and travel to the location that Doug recommended I go to. So, and pick up an agent there, hopefully. It's possible that the location has changed, I'm assuming there's a good reason why he wants me to go to that specific location in EVE Online. So I'll have to wait and see.
So is this a game you bought or just one that Doug showed you?
Excuse me?
Is this a game you just bought?
Or no, I haven't bought it. Basically, it's a free online game.
Oh, okay.
Though you can purchase ISCs, I think it is. I forget the money that you can buy. You can buy in game money, or you can earn it through Flex. And that's how you build up. You know, your ship and so forth is through either like mining or you can, there's all kinds of jobs that you can perform to earn money within the game.
Let's see.
And in addition to that, you can actually spend real money to buy in-game money.
Right.
So.
Okay.
And the whole idea, obviously, that the more time or more money you, real money that you put into the game, you're more invested in that game, you know, because they'll use that money to upgrade your ship to do this kind of things, and which means you're not going to want to be dead, you know. The idea, as I said, you're more, you're more invested in it.
Yeah. So board games that I found that. Gamers. There was one that I played with Erica and Ashley, and there was a few other people I played with. It was a Steve Jackson game.
He's got a few of them.
What's that?
He's got a few of them.
Right. This one was apparently there's another game called Loot Letter. And this was the Steve Jackson Munchkin version of Loot Letter.
Oh, okay.
Or Love Letter. Called Loot Letter.
Of course.
It was a simple card game. Mm-hmm. And there were, I think, 10 varieties of cards in the deck. Each variety of cards, there was either one or two, and there was one particular card that there was like four of them in the deck. So it was a very small deck. No more than 20 cards or so in the deck. And so every turn, you pick a card, you discard a card. And depending on And you take one card from the deck and you hide it away so nobody knows if you've been counting the cards, you don't know what the hidden one is. So if there's one card left, you don't know whether there's actually two that are missing. One of them's hidden, one of them's not. So you can't tell what somebody's got. Mm-hmm. Yes. But each card has a number from 1 to 10. And at the end of the game, whoever has the highest number card in their hand wins.
Huh.
But I think there's not 10, there's 8 different numbers. So the highest one is 8, which is loot. And the advantage of loot is that if you're holding on to loot at the end of the game, you win. But if you have to discard loot, you lose all, you're out of that hand.
Okay.
And then the next one is just so there's different cards and each card has a different function, and some of the cards take players out. Like the lowest ranking card is Potted Plant. And basically, if you play a potted plant, you pick a player and you say, do you have that card in your hand? And if they do, they're out of the round. So it's whoever's last person standing in the round, or you run out of cards. whoever has the highest.
Huh.
Another one was Duck of Doom, where you play Duck of Doom on another player,
mm-hmm.
and then you compare. So you pick a card, you play a card. So I pick a card, I play Duck of Doom. Whatever I've got in my hand, whatever they've got in their hand, whichever is the highest card, that player is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever has a lower card, they're out of the round. So if I play Duck of Doom on somebody, chances are that one of us is going to be out of the round.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah. Now, oh, geez. What's the original game? Darn. The original
Love Letter.
No. The one.
Munchkin.
Yeah. That, you know, obviously this part Duck of Doom is part of the original Munchkin game, which is
yes.
One of the things you could pick up, the Duck of Doom.
Yeah.
Munchkin is always a very campy game.
It is.
Yeah, that was always a weird thing. That where I taught my kids how to play, but I didn't tell them how to be really vicious. You know,
learn that on their own, eh?
No, they never played it that way.
Because
I never taught them how to do that.
Oh,
so basically, you the whole idea was that it was you against the card deck. You didn't actually play against other players.
Oh, so it wasn't a battle, a river in Egypt.
Right. It wasn't, you know, cutthroat, basically.
Right. So. Other games was Azul, which was something that Eric brought on board.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a tile-based game, and that was kind of interesting. You had different colored tiles, and it was just a matter of matching tiles to get points.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of interesting. And then there was one, Concordia was actually pretty good. I think that came out on Monday when I saw it. And Concordia was an act. Basically, had a hand with cards, and those cards were actions. So every turn, you get to play one action, and the actions. And you had a map of the Mediterranean, and there were cities, and each city would have something that it would produce.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the actions was to build a colony in that city, in which case with another action where you could take a whole area of the map and say, okay, that area is going to produce, and if you own any cities in that area, they get their production. And the production was food, stone, oil, and silk. And metal. And another action was to trade product for denarias, or basically money. And at the end of the game, there was a scoring system depending on what cards you had in your hand. And each card. It was an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at that. And then there was another one, Brass. And apparently there's a new version of it out called Birmingham, which I looked at the game. I saw them as they were packing it up. Unfortunately, I didn't see it played, and it looked kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Vassell, are you familiar with Dice Tower, Tom Vassell?
No, I've heard of Dice Tower, but not Tom Vassell, no.
Tom Vassell has a series of YouTube videos called Dice Tower, where he reviews games.
Right, right. I've watched a couple of the games that to get an idea of if I want to buy a game or not.
Right, right. And he had some interesting things to say about Brass Birmingham. He said it's a great game. A lot of people love it. It's got very high production values, very well balanced, very well thought of, but he doesn't like it. I mean, it's a beautiful game. A lot like Scythe in that the graphics are beautiful and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Very high production values of the materials used in it. The game balances is really nice, but he says it's too much work and not enough fun.
Understood. Well, you know, to each his own, I guess, you know.
Yeah, it was like one of the top rated games of all time. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, it sounds like he likes simpler games where it's not as much work.
Well, it's not so much simpler games as that one he said was too much. Apparently, it required you to think 4 or 5 moves ahead and plan things out.
Right.
It was more strategic rather than tactical, which I think would also apply to Through the Ages in a way. Because if you're not with Through the Ages, if you're not thinking 3-4 turns ahead, you're going to end up like the classic example is you run out of food production. Then what do you do? Like, oh, I don't have enough food production. I can't get any more people made. And without those people, I can't even build more agriculture to get more food. And, you know, it's like sometimes people are at the point where they're actually having to demolish buildings just to free up a worker that they can put into agriculture. I'm sure you've been at that point in the game.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of resources that you can end up in that position with, where it's like, happiness is another one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The biggest issue, obviously, with Through the Ages and depending upon how you go, you know, if you have a lot of people based items, you know, happiness and other things, you run out. People get expensive.
Yes, they do.
You know.
At the beginning of the game, they're deceptively cheap, but they get really, really expensive. And then you lose 2 yellow cubes every age, and it's like, barely make it. And then, poof, 2 cubes go away. It's like, now what do I do?
Right. This keeps on. This makes the people even more expensive. And then, of course, then there's the issue that, okay, you decrease your population, but... the thing is, because you decrease your population, you might actually have to, you might have unsatisfied people because of the happiness for that level isn't there. So you have to make them happy,
right.
And you don't have the people to. You might not have the people to do it.
Yeah. Well, you can always get them by destroying buildings, but other production that you paid so dearly to set up, or the dangerous tactic of I'll reduce my military to free up some people so I can build happiness and food production, but now I'm vulnerable to other people attacking me.
Agreed. And that's when you need Gandhi.
Sometimes he's enough.
Yeah, sometimes he's not.
Gandhi is great, except for when somebody's got enough military actions that they're like, "You've got Gandhi, I can still declare war on you."
Understood. Yeah, just, yeah. In the Twitch chat, someone was just mentioning how Tom Vassell dislikes war games and complexity in general.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like basically what I said. It's an agreement with what I said, which is, it sounds like he likes simple games. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, liking... A basic game that doesn't have a lot of complicated rules, doesn't have a lot of mechanics, but again, sometimes those complicated mechanics can really enrich a game, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Definitely Tom Vassell doesn't sound like a person who'd ever play Starfleet Battles.
We are in the Starfleet Battles where it's like, yeah, complicated rules.
For us, it's not that complicated because I'm sure a lot of the stuff is that we've internalized a lot of the rules. In some cases, actually, the rules aren't that complicated because as we've talked about it before, you know, and that is that the reason why there are so many rules for Starfleet Battles to begin with is just for the plain simple reason that the interactions need to be explicitly defined because of what Steve, way back in the day, before the internet, there was a time there was no internet, guys. From some youngins,
that time did
exist. And we actually talked to people on, you know, landlines. We didn't have cell phones, you know, things like that. But anyway, getting back to my point. And that is, Steve Cole found out, you know, when they would run these conventions and have these tournaments in these conventions for playing Starfleet Battles, there'd be arguments breaking out against among people who had interpreted the rules differently than the original intent of the designer, i.e. Steve Cole.
Right.
So basically had to add additional rules to completely clarify that interaction.
Yeah.
And that's why there are so many rules, because it's very, very clear about those interactions. Now, how often do we run into those interactions? Not very often. And of course, when we don't know what an interaction is, we can go look up the rule and say, okay, what happens when this system interact? What happens?
Well, then that's the thing, is that there are so many different systems in Starfleet Battles, and they all interact a little differently. Perfect example, ESGs. What effect do they have on plasmas versus drones versus ships? What happens when two things hit the ESG at the same time? What happens if the ESG comes up at a range and you're already at that range? What happens when Hellbores hit the ESGs? Or other weapons hit the ESGs? How do they affect tractors? They don't, but you can go on and on and on and on. And that's just one system, you know.
Right, agreed.
Yeah. So the other problem with Brass Birmingham is that I'm looking to buy a copy, and it's like, it's apparently a brand new game, but they only made one printing of it, and it's sold out. Now the publisher is scrambling to try to get it
re-released
in stock.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But given the popularity of it, that's but apparently it also, they had, you know, like the money in it was made of almost like a clay coins.
Wow.
How
expensive was the game?
Like $50, $60. Which isn't too bad.
Well, expense-wise, yeah, cost of a game, that's a pretty cheap game.
It might be a little more than that. I don't know.
Yeah, because you're talking about clay coins, were they actual, you know, clay coins, or were they coins that
represent? No, it was more like a higher quality poker chip.
Okay, still, you know, higher quality poker chips get expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, got a question for you. So I was driving home from work today, and I don't know. Do you know of any decent chains that do auto body repair, or should I just look for a mom and pop shop or something like that?
I've always gone with a mom and pop shop for the most part. You know, there's no chains I know of there's no chains I know of, really, that do do body work, really. Most of them are singular shops.
Yeah, it was kind of one of these things where I'm driving down the interstate and it's moderate traffic, and there was a object on the road, and apparently one car kicked it over and it went slide. It was a steel frisbee, like almost like a hubcap that had been run over and flattened.
Right.
So I think it was three lanes, and apparently the car in the left lane hit it and it went skittering across the road to the right lane, and another car ran over it and that tossed it into the air, and it was in midair when I ran into it.
For me, the only worst thing when it comes
I'm in the center lane, and this, I see this thing, it jumps from the left lane to the right lane and thrown into the air, and it's like,
where am I supposed to go?
It bounced off the hood of my car. It's like, fuck.
Watch your language.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Well, that's what I said when it happened.
Oh, understood. Understood.
It didn't dent anything, but it scratched the paint down to bare metal. It's like,
I got comments on the Twitch chat room, and they're just mentioning how mechanics wise, you know, SFB is one of those things that is kind of complicated game mechanics wise, or can be anyway. But they were comparing it. They're saying, well, one of the games that more complicated than that is Ken's Burnside's attack vector, which I have to agree is
squadron.
Yeah, attack vector.
Squadron strike.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's called squadron strike these days. That's true.
Yeah. Well, Ken has some different theories about that. He claims his game is simpler than Starfleet Battles.
Another one that's mentioned is Birds of Prey. Says
also by Burnside.
Yeah, Aegis 777 says Birds of Prey has to win the complexity award though, which wouldn't surprise me, because I know the thing is with Ken Burnside's the Squadron Strike and Birds of Prey, he's the whole thing is that it is physics based.
Yes. And,
so that just makes things a lot more complicated. If you try to get that kind of, I mean, real realism into a game, you know, that's when people go, where's the computer? Because, dang, man.
Yeah, there is something of that. I will say that in terms of, in a lot of terms, a lot of what Ken's games are doing is simpler than Starfleet Battles. In some ways, it's more complicated. In the sense that Starfleet Battles is 32 impulses to a turn, and
right. Well, it's dividing it up. So that, to me, that's not that much of a complicated mechanic. The actual movement is not that complicated. The speed is not that complicated.
Correct.
Now,
correct.
As we pointed out, it's the interaction of the systems. That's when it gets complicated.
Yes.
You know.
That's where Burnside stuff, the interactions for the systems is not necessarily as complicated, but there is some stuff in there.
Right, but come on. I think we're both going to agree that, like, Squadron Strike, and I'm assuming Birds of Prey are based on the same model, which is the 3D movement model.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is, that is the most complicated thing I've ever attempted to understand when it comes to movement.
I agree. Now, having said that, Squadron Strike is plot, move, shoot. That's your turn.
Hmm?
But you the plot, top
part, yeah, but
you move, and then you shoot.
But
and
yeah, agree. But Barry, the
one
top,
in, basically is
continue.
And depending on the moves, you could go from I'm looking at somebody where a number of hexes apart, and he's in front of me, and we move, and now he's behind me. Where Starfleet Battles. You know, in Squadron Strike, you could move, you know, 10, 20 hexes in that one move. Whereas in Starfleet Battles, it's rare for somebody to move more than one hex in a turn. The only thing I can think of is objects that are moving fast in speed 32, which is not ships, but certain higher speed plasmas can do that. And I think ultra warp drones can do that, but. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Rin transporters, where their ships don't actually move, but they hop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
I think they can go.
But the big thing, Barry, always been was plotting the movement.
Yeah.
I understand that some people, it's like, yeah, I got it, no problem. You know, we're there.
Yeah.
They completely internalized the whole idea of the vector-based movement and how, you know, if I push it this way, this happens. About it. And they completely, and they've got it. Boom, they're gone. That at that point, they love the game because they truly understand it.
Yeah.
Me, I consider myself a very bright individual, and now. Obviously, I'm not perfect. There's things I still have to learn and so forth. But same time, I'm not saying I'm a genius or anything. Lord knows I'm not. But the thing is that game is for me. I never truly understood the plot how the plot movement in that game.
Yeah.
You know.
Actually, the movement was the least was one of the things that wasn't too terribly bad for me in that game. But one thing that I did have a lot of trouble with was what firing arc is that other ship in? And where is he going to hit me? So, okay. So we've moved. Now I want to find out where is that ship in relationship to me so I can figure out if he's in arc and what the distance is. And that's actually a fairly complicated calculation.
Oh, understood. Now, the one thing I must admit that I do like about Ken Burnside's game, both Squadron Strike The Squad Detroit is the only one I've ever really learned how to try to learn to play. I'm assuming Bird of Prey has the same kind of mechanics. Is that the whole idea of you have to pre-plot your movement. I always thought that is... that's where Starfleet Battles actually originated, was pre-plotted movement.
I remember.
And if you listen to me long enough, I'm sure you've heard me mention this multiple times. That's one of the reasons why I've liked the Star Armada stuff. Because when I first was introduced to Star Armada at Origins, many, many years ago, they showed pre-plotted movement. And it's like, wow, this is cool. I love this idea of having to outguess your opponent about where he's going to go.
Right.
And the movements were small enough that, number of moves that you have was small enough that it wasn't like in the case of Starfleet Battles where you have to, you might want to try pre-plot the whole freaking turn. You can't pre-plot a whole turn. That's what I've always thought.
Well, we used to do that all the time, and sometimes it's like you'd end up going right past somebody. And it's like, oh, there was my perfect opportunity to fire, but I didn't have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think he's going to zig. I'm going to zag, and all of a sudden it went the other way, and it's like he's out of arc. Understood. Oh crap!
Understood. Yeah, understood. Oh, anyone who's watching me on video. If you see me turning to the right, or it might be your left, I'm actually looking at the Twitch channel. So
I didn't know that this talk show went on video.
Yep. I've been recording my screen for 3 months. Maybe more.
I did not know that.
I've been broadcasting it live on YouTube, and then YouTube decided to drop Hangouts. And they said, at that point, I was just recording my screen, and Hangouts, the new webcam version, does not work if you don't have a webcam. And my guess now that if I have a webcam, which I now do because it's, some of the people on YouTube were pressing, we need a little more. It's like, okay, well, what the heck? I'll buy a webcam and let's try that out for. This is my second, this is the second, podcast with an actual video camera. My guess, even with that, the webcam, the YouTube for the webcam would just be me. It wouldn't do it also the screen. It's like, which is nuts. So that's why I'm using OBS to do a live screenshot of my desktop, which the Twitch people can see, and also with a little box in the upper right-hand corner of me live video saying, hi. So people can see me, and people can also... obviously hear you and hear me. That's one thing I totally forgot about. Unfortunately, you weren't here last week, which is I forgot about recording you because I had to do something special to have it so that everyone can hear me on TalkShoe, but also I needed something. Well, yeah, TalkShoe. Originally it was, not talk to you. It was on YouTube. Had to do something special. And I hadn't been doing the same thing on OBS. Now I'm doing that same thing on OBS, and Twitch should be hearing everything. They're talking about pre-implied movement, how much Dr. Admore, I think. It's either that or Dradmore. I'm not sure how you pronounce his call sign on Twitch. Says that he hates pre-implied movement. Aegis 777 was just relating the pre-plotted movement only favored the folks who know the rules less, in his opinion. It could even even the playing field by allowing player better opponent to out be outguessed. And he said he hated pre-plotted movement too, and it's Dradmore. So, thank you, Dradmore, for telling me. But you know, those people. Yeah. If I look over, that's what I'm doing. I'm reading over there, or am I being replying? Maybe I can look for a little better setup for that, because I think I might be able to mount the iPad to be above the camera. You know, hi. So it'd be up here. So I just have to look up, and then the keyboard I'm using for the iPad is actually a wireless keyboard. So Dave also did. Jeez, you guys, good grief me, good grief. I love the pre-plotted movement. At least minor pre-plotted movement. Here's one thing. I'll be honest. I've never actually played SMB with pre-plotted movement.
Oh, really?
Really. I would love to.
Interesting.
Because the tough part about... Well, actually, I kind of have used pre-plotted movement. Because if anybody's... Now, this is back in the day. And I have not actually seen anyone do this for a long time. The last time I was actually a moderator for one of the games, which is played by email.
Ah.
Yeah. That uses pre-plotted movement.
It does.
And then, of course, you can have breaks for certain things. But the whole idea is, if you really think about it, and this is one thing I found by playing play by email, there's a lot of movement which is extraneous. A lot of little tweaks and twerks. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter that greatly to the outcome of the game. Now, there is certain times it matters greatly. And usually that has to do with when you're trying to run the fine line between running around a bunch of seeking weapons and being hit by them. That is when pre-plotted movement has its, in this case, played by email, has its difficulties. You know, you can do it. It just, what it does, it requires more effort. That's all. You know.
Well, what pre-plotted movement did was it made 8-speed drones and useful, and 32-speed plasmas and plasmas were much more powerful with pre-plotted movement because firing and launching of those weapon systems were not pre-plotted.
Right. Understood. Yeah, the seeking weapons were never pre-plotted. They always were, here's your target, go.
Yeah.
And we have a brave person, which I've never done this before. Jedi Psycho in the Twitch chat room saying, in my group, we only use pre-plotted when we allowed the Romulans to use hidden cloak.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Because, it makes sense for when it comes to having the Romulans use pre-plotted movement. To a certain degree, when you have a hidden cloak, that makes a lot of sense, especially for the Romulans, who, when you have to do pre-plotted movement, that movement is basically forces you to record the movement. Even though, even when you're not using pre-plotted movement, when using Raman hidden movement, you're supposed to record it so that when you uncloak, the players later on can verify what your plot was. And obviously, it helps also the person who is not cloaked because they have to write their plot, their movement plot too. Therefore, you both can verify that what was the case was true, because You always have the tough part, which is cheating. When you have, say, oh, remove the ship off the board. Oh, you go from here and I got to go there. But how'd you get there? Oh, I did this, this, and this. And you just have to believe them, you know.
Yeah. Well, having said that, a hidden cloak makes the cloak so much more powerful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. That's why they say give the Romulan a 25% BPV penalty kind of for it. Their ships cost 25% more if you use hidden cloak.
Yeah.
And I think that's about right. I've only, let me see.
Yeah.
Have I ever used hidden cloak?
Well,
I played once with a hidden cloak. Because the reason I remember it was because of I remember playing it, and then see the thing is with hidden cloak, you're allowed to kind of try to triangulate the Romulan ship while it's cloaked. Mm-hmm. So you have multiple ships.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, what you ask, okay, what shield are you off of on this ship, and this ship? So given a number of ships, they still have an idea of the area that you are in. Obviously, if your ships are really close and there are different shields, you know exactly where you're in. But, you know,
even
hidden cloak is not completely hidden, you know, where you have no ability to know where he is.
Yeah. The soldier has a true hidden cloak.
Oh, understood.
Yeah.
But even that's what the 16 impulse use, I think?
It's only up for 16 impulses.
Right.
That's correct.
Right. This one versus a Romulan, you could spend all day under cloak if you wanted to.
Right.
So it's more limited cloak. It's more mainly more for escaping things, or you know,
a surprise,
an escape, you know, whether it's a surprise or not, because most of the time you would not do that as an offensive thing.
Hate to say this, but I need to get to sleep at this point, so I'm going to have to sign off.
Understood. Okay, well.
Okay.
You have a good night.
Night.
Okay. I'm just reading this real quick from Aegis. He said that they play with hidden cloak often, but the Romulan used a counter on the map and kept the ship within 10 hexes of the counter. That sounds reasonable. Aegis 777. Did you actually ever use the triangulation method that I was talking about? Because I'm pretty sure I know that was in the rules about how I think it was how many times a turn. It's been a long while, so I can't remember exactly. How many times you could do a turn? I think it was four times a turn. No, that sounds too often. Maybe it was only two times a turn. Don't remember. But it makes it quite interesting, you know, using a hidden Romulan cloak. And hopefully, next week we're talking about L'Oreal. I have to look up those rules for L'Oreal and see what. I'm sure Barry will also email me what the current tournament ship is for that, which should be quite interesting to see, you know. Yeah. He's just 777 just saying that, no, they didn't do that, but he has to reread the rules. Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that rule was in there. Now, obviously, it's been a very long time because, for all I know, it was in there in the Commander's Edition, and they removed it for the Captain's Edition. Because I've been playing that long. I've been playing since, let me think. I was in college between 84 and 89. So that means obviously late 80s, and that's when they had volume 1, volume 2, volume 3 of the Commander's Edition. So you get these the big boxes with them, and what you actually would do is you would slice them so that because of I'm pretty sure they were, yeah, the rules were hole punched at that time, but they still were bound. Not bound, but they were stapled. They were stapled is what they were. And what I had to do is take the staples out, and then I would cut them, in, I think individually or something, because I remember that the edges that were in the center of the binder were never really perfect, which, you know, I didn't care, because the important thing is that I was able to get them into a single binder and organize the rules so they were in the proper sections, the proper order for those sections. Okay, so I have played against Cloak a lot, though, and don't you agree it can be quite easy to retain lock on? Depends. You just, 777. I've never found it to be easy because here's the thing. When it comes to the Romulan Cloak, it's not easy for the Romulan to break lock on, but the important thing is a couple things. One is distance, and the second is speed. If you want to go under, the Romulan has to slow its butt down. Because if you look at the calculation, the slower you are, the better chance you are of breaking the lock on. And then, of course, there's the ranges. Then if you get down the range, obviously, if you get down to speed 4, you can increase your ECM for breaking lock on. If you need to, that's, and worst case scenario, if the Romulan has really difficult problems with breaking lock on, they can do a full stop. If they do a full stop, obviously that's going to slow them down. But come on, if you have ever looked at the cost of the cloaking, you're not going that fast as it stands if you're actually doing that. Of course, then there's also the toggle thing where you would start at a higher speed, then downshift to a slower speed, and then you shift it back up and maybe back down again. The whole idea of that being is that you get multiple opportunities to break lock on. And as I said, worst case scenario, the Romulan can go speed 0 and they get a big, I think it's -2 on the speed factor. And the speed factor for that calculation for lock on, in which case it's almost guaranteed that the ship can get break lock on unless you're right on top of them. But of course, if you're right on top of them, the Romulan has worse problems than that. Because the worst thing ever for a Romulan when it's cloaked is to be cloaked and you have lock on. That is the worst thing ever. Because you can still be hit. Yeah, there's still that adjusted the range modifier. And I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure you still have the shift, the modifier for when you fire, each one has to be, you have that the shift, if I recall correctly. It's been a while since I've actually played with the cloaking, against the cloak ship, or even having cloak ship myself. So in that case, you're screwed. So you can still be hit. The whole idea is you go under cloak to avoid being hit, or at least have quite a bit of penalty, i.e. the double the range. It's like double the range plus 5. Yeah, double the range plus 5. If you're fully cloaked. If you, and you break lock on, but if you don't break lock on, I think you still have the plus five, but you no longer have the double the range. So it's not that bad. Well, yeah. If you, if your opponent is doing full ECCM, yeah. But again, if you're a Rahman, you're going to do that. And as I said, the whole gear shifting thing will definitely will help the Rahman to break it, because of he'll get multiple opportunities to break lock on. Because if you've done a faster speed, if you can get you have it so that you have a midterm speed change down to a lower speed to get you to the next bracket, because you're always looking at those brackets when it comes to the calculations for the speed factor. Because that's one that you can easily control. And as I said, worst case scenario, drop the hammer. I got to get under, do an ED, emergency deceleration. I'm sure you know what that means. And then stop, do a full stop, and then you're free. Now, obviously, there is an issue with doing a full stop because of, again, even with a, because a full stop, and even if you're under cloak, if your opponent overruns you, you've still got a problem because they still have an opportunity to do damage to your ship. Now, that's the whole idea is the cloak will help mitigate some of that damage, but it will not completely protect you. That's the way, at least when it comes to SFP, that's the way it is. Unlike Hidden Cloak, you know, I have to double check the rules when it comes, because I'm pretty sure you can't even fire when it's on Hidden. Unless you... but it doesn't make sense. I would think that you could still do that, still fire, but you wouldn't know if you hit or not. Well, actually, yes, you would, because of in that case you flashbulb the ship. That's another issue, which is flashbulbing, which where the whole idea is to lay out a T-bomb and have the Romulan player run close to the T-bomb, have it go off, it then flashbulbs the Romulan, and you get for an instant you get to re-roll the lock on that you've previously broken. You have a chance to re-roll and actually get lock on. Now, this is the one thing that it's been a while since I've looked at the cloaking rules when it comes to that particular interaction. Because I don't remember if you temporarily get lock on because of the flashbulbing and then you re-roll on based on the initial break, or you have to do what is, happens at the beginning of every turn, which is the opportunity to, if you are able to retain lock on or attain lock on. I think, if I recall correctly, you can do that at the beginning of every turn. But if you flashbulb, you can do it immediately. Okay. Well, I think, my dear friends, it's been enjoyable. Thank you, Aegis777 and Dragmar on Twitch. And of course, Dave, you in TalkShoe. It has been a blast. I'm glad we got to actually talk about SFB and not just other games, especially because this is supposed to be Starfleet Universe on call, so we're supposed to be talking about SFB stuff or Federation Empire or Federation Commander or things of that nature. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.